both know you're the best. How can they say you're like all the rest?
Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett, waging the all-out struggle for truth with great guests who tell it like it is, way outside of the mainstream box. One of the great American truth tellers of our time is my guest today, Wayne Madsen. Wayne Madsen is a former NSA officer who, I guess he took the red pill way back and got tired of the discrepancy between the myth and the reality, and he's been digging up really interesting aspects of reality ever since. I sometimes call Wayne the thinking man's Seymour Hersh, and Wayne just may have helped blow Ted Cruz right out of the race by discovering a very interesting link between Ted's dad and the JFK assassination that was then brought up by Donald Trump. And the next thing you know, Cruz is fleeing with his tail between his legs. So, hey, congratulations, Wayne Madsen.
Well, thanks. He's actually the second Cuban-American presidential candidate I helped to helped along to leave the race. The first, of course, Marco Rubio, and the story that went all over the country about his attending gayish foam party get-togethers in South Beach, Miami, back in the 90s.
So. Yeah, I wrote up your story with the headline. was Marco Rubio the guy with cocaine at the orgy or something like that? And it got a lot of reads.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is I've been told that when Chris Christie, who was still a candidate, he kept referring to Marco as the boy in the bubble. It was a direct reference to
the soap bubble.
To the soap bubbles, right.
Jeez. Oh, man. You know, you can't make this stuff up. We had, like, you know, maybe the two leading establishment candidates for the Republican presidential nomination, both having fathers who played a role in the JFK assassination. I mean, where do they get these people?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I mean, the The Ted Cruz or Rafael, his father, deal, that was always hiding in plain sight. I had to laugh that there's actually been a schism, not a new one. It's just another schism between these various JFK assassination researchers. So you've got the lone gunman, the lone nutter conspiracy theorists, against the those who believe it was a wider conspiracy and agree with the findings of the 1978 House Select Committee on Assassinations, which concluded the very same thing, that Oswald could not have acted alone. There's been all sorts of charges that the photograph that shows a dead ringer for Rafael Cruz handing out pamphlets in New Orleans in August of 63, along with Lee Harvey Oswald, is a Photoshop. And the problem with that is that photograph comes right out of the Warren Report.
So why would they be Photoshopping that long before Photoshop
was
invented?
Exactly, before there was Photoshop. And so you've got this ironic situation where the JFK researchers who reject the findings of the Warren Report are now supporting it, at least with that photograph, that exhibit that was contained in the Warren Report. And you got the pro-Warren Report people trying to suggest that the Warren Commission somehow got in a time machine, went into the future, grabbed a copy of Photoshop, and then came back with the altered photograph.
Wow. Well, of course, there are allegations that various kinds of altered film and photography were part of the JFK assassination. My Madison, Wisconsin colleague Jim Fetzer here is famous for arguing that the Zapruder film is, in fact, edited through fairly sophisticated techniques.
That's true. I actually once spoke to one of the engineers who worked for the CIA contractor called ITEC up in Massachusetts, and they were given the original copy of the Zapruder film to remove two very important frames from that film. And it's assumed that everyone would think it was after Kennedy's limousine comes from behind this road sign, this highway sign. But I understand that the two frames were taken out before the limousine goes behind the signs, because it would have clearly shown that there was a bullet that struck the limousine from a different position from where Oswald was in the school book depository.
Wow. Very, very interesting stuff. So Cruise is out now. He's gone down in flames, I guess. And to what extent do you think that Trump's willingness to talk about these things has led to his success? He was talking about 9/11 in a very interesting way. He helped drive Bush out of the race due to that. And then he brought this up. He actually mentioned this business of Cruz's father. He tweeted something. Didn't he tweet, like, why isn't the media investigating, you know, Cruz's father being involved with the
JFK assassination? He actually was on Fox and Friends, a morning show on Fox News, and he called in, and they asked him to respond to Rafael Cruz's sermon, I guess, for lack of a better word, where he was saying that, you know, Christian should vote for his son because he was like ordained by the Lord to be president. So they were asking Trump what he thought about that. And he said, well, I find that disgusting. And then he drops the bombshell. He says, yeah, well, do people know that Ted Cruz's father was there with Lee Harvey Oswald before Oswald was shot? It was very interesting how he worded that. Trump said before Oswald was shot, not before Kennedy was shot, which may indicate that Trump doesn't believe the findings of the Warren Commission either and believes that Oswald was taken out to eliminate a huge source of information that would have led to the wider conspiracy.
And so you think that your work in—I think you were the original source of this story, right?
I was the source for the National Enquirer story.
Right, and so then that made its way to Alex Jones, and from there to the Trump campaign.
To the Trump campaign, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I have to say that McClatchy—they were pretty fair in their coverage of the. Of the issue, the photograph, the story. They did interview a couple of debunkers to the National Enquirer story, but they also presented the other side, the facts of, as expressed in the story. And of course, the McClatchy story, among other papers, wound up in the Miami Herald, which was quite interesting because of the large Cuban population down there.
Right. And maybe we should clarify for any listeners to this show who may not be JFK assassination buffs. You know, there are only so many conspiracies you can really be an expert on, that when Oswald was handing out pamphlets for the Fair Play for Cuba Committee in New Orleans in the run-up to the JFK assassination, it's not like he was really a communist with, you know, no dubious connections. On the contrary, his office was right next to, it was right on, you know, next door, I think, in the same office building to the CIA office, right?
Right, the one that was run by a guy named Guy Bannister, a former FBI agent who was part of the whole operation in New Orleans to conspire to kill President Kennedy. And there's a lot of people who believe that Oswald penetrated this network and was feeding information or intelligence on the plot to both the CIA and the FBI. We have employee and contract numbers for Oswald from both agencies. So he was on their payroll. And, of course, the problem was the intelligence that Oswald was feeding the FBI and the CIA was being just, you know, ignored because both agencies were involved in the plot to kill President Kennedy. John McCone, the then CIA director, was obviously involved. J. Edgar Hoover was obviously involved. And Alan Dulles, who had preceded McCone as CIA director and was fired by President Kennedy over that Bay of Pigs fiasco, was certainly part of the operation. And just a few months ago, I reported, based on some information that I gathered at the Truman Library and also the Eisenhower Library, that and the CIA archives in Washington, that it was quite clear that Alan Dulles, who was named to the Warren Commission by President Johnson after Harry Truman wrote an op-ed just a week after Kennedy's death, regretting the fact that he ever formed the CIA and that it had gotten out of control completely, that Truman was visited at his Independence, Missouri home by Alan Dulles, who threatened him, and told him, "Look, you're no longer president. The CIA over the last several years has been transformed, and therefore, how about just keeping your mouth shut now about the CIA?" Dulles was actually on his way to Dallas to start his quote unquote investigation, which was a cover-up of the Kennedy assassination. I was also told by someone who has read the Eisenhower papers that Dulles also paid him a visit at his farm in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, because Eisenhower, his initial reaction to the assassination was the American people are not going to be stampeded. It was a good term for a guy who had a cattle ranch. Stampeded into any sort of belief about who assassinated Kennedy. I understand Dulles also paid him a visit and threatened him as well. Now, there might have been a third ex-president threatened, I don't know whether by Dulles or some other representative, when ex-president Herbert Hoover, who was a very good friend of John F. Kennedy, heard about the assassination. You know, he was 89 years old, very frail. He lived at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York. When he heard about the assassination, he became very, very ill and actually had to go to the hospital. That was the reason he could not attend the funeral in Washington. And some people believe that that Hoover may have actually known something about the threats against Kennedy and the fact that they were carried out. He became very sick as a result.
Interesting stuff. And all of this underlines the fact that the Oval Office is kind of a dangerous place. I guess the presidency still means enough that occasionally, you know, people get killed over it or and around it. And that leads to the question of Trump talking about these issues he's not supposed to talk about, 9/11, JFK assassination, and so on. There are those who think that Trump is really a loose cannon who's terrifying the establishment. Others who think that he's really more or less just a shill to get Hillary elected. What's your take on Trump?
Well, I would preface this by there's many people who feel that, you know, Trump now with the Bush family en masse saying they're not going to support him. We actually saw during the debate in Houston, and now this is after Jeb left the race, for some reason, old man Bush decided he had to attend that debate in Houston. He was a member of the audience. And
yeah, he made the throat-cutting gesture.
He made the throat-cut sign, right?
When isn't that amazing?
Speaking. And look, the guy I know is half senile. Many people believe, and there's photographic evidence to support this, that Bush himself was present in front of the school book depository on November 22nd, 1963. And that throat cut sign was probably meant to send a message to Trump, before the Indiana primary, my source on the Marco Rubio photo of him in the at the gay foam parties in South Beach, is a guy named Gary Welsh. He was an attorney. He ran a blog called Advance Indiana. Although he was a Republican, he was very big on election integrity. He had gone before the Indiana Election Commission on a number of occasions about what he considered to be election irregularities. And he also was helping to advance the Ted Cruz, the Rafael Cruz story as far as JFK was concerned. And they said that Gary Welsh, the police said he shot himself in the stairwell of his Indianapolis apartment just a day or two before the Indiana primary, and the police ruled it a suicide. And I'm very familiar with these so-called suicides or actually murders. The police based this on the fact that one of his last entries on his blog site, Advance Indiana, said, "I may not be around on Tuesday, but I think Trump's going to win Indiana and come in right under 40, you know, at 49%, right under 50. It turns out he got 53%. And police used only that to determine before an autopsy that Welch committed suicide. Well, we know that Martin Luther King, right before he was assassinated, also said, "I may not," in his famous speech, "I've been to the mountaintop, I may not get there with you." Of course, we know he didn't commit suicide based on that comment.
Yeah.
So why do people believe that Trump, why do people believe that Welch committed suicide based on that comment? It may have been, Welch's death may have been just to send a signal to those who were looking at Raphael's involvement with Lee Harvey Oswald, which also included, as I said, George H.W. Bush was involved in that conspiracy to kill the president. Welch's death may just have been a signal to a lot of people.
Well, was Welch actually talking about this JFK connection?
Yeah, he was. He was advancing the story on his website, and he had quite a few articles. After my article appeared in early April, then he picked up on it and ran with it too, and ran subsequent stories about the Raphael Cruz Oswald connection.
That's interesting, but it's a little weird that they would go after a fairly obscure blogger like that. That actually, you know, makes me worry a little bit. I always like to think that they only go after the really important people with the huge audiences, and that's why Alex Jones has to be a little bit careful sometimes. But you know, at my level, but hey, yeah. You know, who knows?
They may I mean, Welch might have been obscure outside of Indiana, but actually, his Advance Indiana website was well known in Indiana. He actually had been an aide to a top legislator in the Illinois. I believe it was the Illinois Senate, and so he had a lot of background in politics, and he was a real gadfly apparently in Indiana and in Indianapolis, and I sort of liken him, sort of the conservative Republican and not neocon certainly, version of my friend Bob Fitrakis in Columbus, Ohio, who also is an attorney. And has various publications, the Free Press, for example, and he's been a candidate for public office, including the Green Party candidate for governor of Ohio. He's run as a Democrat as well, and he's also somebody who is always there to challenge election irregularities in Ohio, including the 2004 election that saw George W. Bush get another term. When people like this are in the case of Welch, assassinated, I think it does send a message to people, a chilling message. And obviously Trump knows about Welch now through Alex Jones and other websites. He hasn't commented on it, but I think you know, the message is loud and clear that people are willing to, in this country, assassinate people who are threats to the status quo.
Indeed, they are. And that leads us to discuss the deep state issues that are going to be part of the proceedings at the Left Forum. Now, I understand you won't be actually traveling to New York. Will you still be participating through Skype?
I don't know what arrangements I can set up. Perhaps that is an option. Not able to get up to New York for that.
Well, it's interesting that the Left Forum, the biggest event for the American left, is actually going to be talking about false flags, 9/11 truth, assassinations, the deep state, all these things that people like us have been talking about for many, many years, you longer than me. And it seems like a lot of folks are starting to catch on. Maybe the gatekeepers are asleep on the watch. I mean, why are they letting us in this year?
Yeah, the gatekeepers, you know, it's amazing. I mean, and I do believe that this is why Ted Cruz, against every pundit's earlier belief, left the presidential race so suddenly after he said he was going to, even if he lost Indiana, he was going to go on to California and on to Cleveland. What I've been told by people who are familiar with his campaign, that look, the CIA for 53 years has managed to keep the JFK assassination out of the mainstream media. It got a little bit of play with that ridiculous official ceremony at Dealey Plaza on the 50th anniversary in 2013, the one where, you know, you had to have a special VIP invitation to attend. We had a lot of people who were there, some of whom were actually old enough to have been probably remotely associated with the assassination. That the CIA, the deep state, if you will, tapped Ted Cruz on the shoulder and say, look, this has gotten out of hand. We're aborting your mission. You're getting out of the race.
Hmm. So you think that the election tampering folks just decided to throw up their hands that, you know, Trump was so far ahead that it was unstealable, whereas, for instance, with Sanders versus Hillary, they may very well have been able to massage the vote count enough to make sure Hillary got it?
Right, right. I think that's, you know, I mean, even though Sanders won Indiana, Hillary's coming away with more delegates than he is. I mean, it's not the first time we saw that happen either. And Trump is the wild card in this. Now they're, you know, with neocons like McCain's former chief of staff, Mark Salter, saying he's endorsing Hillary. He also said he's doing that because Donald Trump is to the left of Hillary Clinton. I mean, you talk about a wacky election. I've never seen anything like it. I thought 92 was pretty odd with Ross Perot at one time sitting at 33%, which he was ahead of both Clinton and George Bush in that year. For a short time he was, until he left the race over some story. And I don't think he was lying about it, certainly, mm-hmm. because we know how Bush operates.
Yeah, he said the Bush crime family was coming after him and threatening his family.
His daughter, they were going to disrupt his daughter's impending wedding with charges. They were apparently going to infiltrate lesbians into the church where the wedding was going to take place and embarrass his daughter, so he got out. And he could never recover from that after that. He did achieve 19%, which was not too shabby in the general election. But had that incident not happened, you know, a lot of people thought Ross Perot could have won as an independent back in 92.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a good example of how dirty tricks can sometimes get you with a reaction to the dirty trick. It was Perot, you know, talking about this that got him in trouble.
That's right, and I thought that was a bizarre election year, but that's really nothing compared to this election year. This is defied. I mean, Trump two things, I think are historic. The mere fact that he has destroyed the Bush political brand for probably two generations is a major feat, mm-hmm. and that he's shown that you don't need these political consultants. He's waged a lot of this campaign on social media, especially Twitter. So what do you need all these television consultants and media consultants and all these other people that he hasn't really been using? He probably will have to start using them. But it's, he's basically said to the political candidates in the United States, look, you don't have to spend all this money on these overpaid political consultants. So I believe we're going to see a lot of nice big mansion homes go up for sale soon in the Washington, D.C. area, especially in Potomac, Maryland, and Great Falls, Virginia, where the mega mansions are. And many of the occupants of those mega mansions are these political lobbyists and consultants.
Well, if, you know, just for those two achievements, knocking the Bush family out of the mix And knocking the political consultants out of the mix, I guess you got to hand it to Trump for that. Where can he go, though, from here? I mean, is he going to get the message that he's going to have to start towing the line? Is he going to have to be making compromises with the neocons and neoliberals?
I'm quite concerned about two endorsements he's recently picked up. The first being Sheldon Adelson, the casino magnate who has dropped millions of dollars on failed candidates like Newt Gingrich in 2012, and then he backed Romney with even more millions. I just hope the endorsement doesn't come with money being dangled in front of Trump, because Trump has already said that he would be an honest broker between Israel and the Palestinians, something that Hillary Clinton criticized him for, and would Ted Cruz absolutely castigated him for that. Ted Cruz saying, you know, I stand only with Israel, and Trump wants to be a honest broker. So Adelson, of course, doesn't want any honest brokerage between Israel and Palestine. So I just hope that that endorsement doesn't come with any financial strings. And then Dick Cheney's recent endorsement of Trump is bothersome, too. Mm-hmm. But we know that Trump has already gone on the record stating that Bush, George W. Bush, did not keep this country safe, and 9/11 occurred on his watch. Well, also, his vice president was Dick Cheney, so I think, Trump was including the entire administration in that.
Right, which leads you to wonder what's going on when Cheney endorses him. We had a report that supposedly Trump is floating Rudy Giuliani as a DHS chief. Is that credible?
Well, Giuliani, although he didn't actually come out and endorse, a lot of these Republicans are afraid to actually come out and endorse Trump. There's so many people being floated as, there's even people floating Ted Cruz for attorney general in a Trump administration, or even worse, being appointed to the Supreme Court. So you got a lot of Republicans now changing their mind on Merrick Garland.
we'll take him.
They don't want to support his nomination. Now they're thinking, my God, what if Trump wins? Maybe we better get Garland in that seat because Cruz could wind up there. I don't know whether this is just. I mean, Trump now is, you know, I mean he got popular through this reality show, on TV. I think he's having a lot of fun dangling carrots in front of people. I was asked, what about his vice presidential pick? And he's a lot of names are out there. Women, especially some women, are mentioning Mary Fallon, the governor of Oklahoma, and former governor Jan Brewer of Arizona. And then somebody said, well, what about Susana Martinez, the Hispanic Republican governor of New Mexico? But, you know, she had a couple of well-publicized incidents involving public drunkenness. And, that, of course, would be used against her. But, this election year is so strange. I mean, some people have even floated the idea, why doesn't Trump ask Biden if he wants to stay on as vice president?
he could be the permanent vice president for life. I mean, they have El Presidente
for life.
For life,
yeah.
So why not?
I think Trump's is having a lot of fun. He's, toying with these establishment political people by dangling these carrots. There's so many people whose names I've heard. I doubt he's going to pick Marco Rubio unless, he thinks that's critical to picking up Florida. But Trump knows about how he did in Florida. Trump won every county in Florida except for Miami-Dade that went to Rubio. So the question is, why do I need Rubio on a ticket?
Well, maybe he needs the bubble party vote.
He might need that vote.
Wayne, I think we hit the end of the half hour. And I really appreciate your great work and hope to have you back again soon because you're really one of the few voices of reason and common sense and fully informed understanding of what's really going on here. So Hey, keep up the great work.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Cruise, we're both traveling so far, burning at fast like a shooting star.
Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio, the all-out quest for true truth, for the real thing, the real deal that's hidden beneath the toxic sludge of lies. And, of course, there's also a lot of toxic sludge of Islamophobia these days. And the presidential campaign has been interesting, with Donald Trump getting a lot of visibility for some massively anti-Islam kinds of statements. There was just a mainstream media article about Muslims for Trump, showing that there are a few who see some good points of Trump, and I'm one of them. I see some good points, but I don't think I'm going to vote for the guy. Anyway, here with me is a very eloquent voice of American Islam. That's Isa Hajj. He's part of the Muslim and a Christian Wake Up in America, which is one of the very best truth-telling radio shows hosted by a Muslim truther, other than my own, of course. Anyway, Isa's here with us, so let's bring him on. Welcome, Isa Hajj. Assalamu alaikum. How you doing?
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you, Kevin. And actually, it's called A Muslim and a Catholic.
Muslim and a Catholic. That's right.
Yeah,
Common
Cal the Catholic. That's right. It's in America. Because, you know, we don't live in America anymore. Unfortunately, we find ourselves in America.
America. Yeah,
you know, all these Trump supporters are Americans.
It's interesting. To pronounce America properly, you have to use some of the same deep throat muscles that you use to pronounce certain Arabic consonants.
This is true. This is very true.
So, hey, what's your take on this crazy presidential race this year?
To be honest with you, I called it a couple of years ago when Hillary put herself in the race. I've been called a conspiracy theorist on this, but it actually time is proving me correct on this, that I firmly believe that back in 2008 that there was an agreement in the DNC if Hillary bowed out of the race to allow Obama to represent the Democratic Party, that not only would she get, you know, Secretary of State, but then when Obama was done and, you know, the next presidential race, she would not only be allowed to run, but would actually win. And I think time has proven me right so far. If we look at all these superdelegates and delegates, that even when Bernie clearly wins the populist vote within that state, she's still getting the superdelegates and the delegates. And then when you have the head of the DNC going on CNN saying that that the delegates and superdelegates purposefully vote for the established Democrat in order to stop grassroots Democrats from getting the nomination. She basically all but proved my point that I believe that Hillary was picked back in 2008 for this. With Donald Trump, you have to think of it like this. This is a $10 billion man here who has done nothing really except for, you know, brand his name and make his name worth something, has nothing to lose as far as political suicide, so he can say and do whatever he wants. And it seems like no matter, you know, what he does or says, more and more people follow him, which is troubling of itself. But I think I'd liken him to, you remember back in the old days when you had those organ grinders and they had those little monkeys in a red fez? And,
well, you know, that was actually before my time, Isa. I grew up at the beginning of the age of television. I didn't realize you were that old.
Yeah, no, I'm not that old, but these organ grinding monkeys, and really that's what Trump really is. I purposefully think that his...
Is he the organ grinder or the monkey?
He's the monkey.
He's the monkey, okay.
Yeah, of course, he's the monkey. And of course, you know, the Zionists that control our government is the organ grinder. But I purposefully believe that, you know, that he's allowed to run and says the things that he says purposefully, whether he believes them or not, in order to draw such a stark contrast between him and Hillary, in order to hide all of Hillary's evil past misdeeds going all the way back to the Watergate scandal as one of the attorneys who was terminated from that for, inappropriate behavior and hiding evidence and things of this nature. So I think that he's purposefully acting the way that he's acting in order to push so many voters towards Hillary in order to usher Hillary's inevitable presidency.
So it's a great Hillary conspiracy on both sides.
I think so.
You could be right. And we'll find out, because if this were, or if it is, an honest race in the sense that Trump can do what he wants, he's not really just shilling to make Hillary go into the White House, he'll beat her, because he could kill her. I mean, he will totally slaughter her if it's an honest race. And if he doesn't, if he somehow self-destructs, or somehow, if Hillary wins, then I will admit that you were right.
Well, you know, the thing is that I don't really think that the powers to be expected Trump to do as well as he did. This is the reason why you have the RNC turning against him. And you look at, that they're beginning here over the last month to do the same things that the DNC is doing with regards to the delegates with Cruz. I mean, realistically, Trump's rise and his number of delegates that he has, every single one of the other ones should have already dropped out. Cruz should still not be in there. But yet, if we look at it, I think that the RNC is pushing for Cruz to be in there, pushing the rest of the established Republicans to fall in line and support him, because of the fact that that's all Trump really was simply just to garner and push people towards and away from the RNC to Hillary to usher her presidency in. But because of the popularity of the comments, that their rhetoric of anti-Islamic comments through the media and governments and their laws and their wars and all of this stuff has actually proven to be so effective that it has saturated the minds of, you know, every American citizen, hence the reason why he is so widely popular across the United States, which that in and of itself is alarming. And should be alarming, because it should remind us of our history here in America.
So if Trump gets elected and he orders all Muslims to register, are you going to register?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Me either.
No, I'll be in whatever little FEMA concentration camp they want to stick me in. But if
they want to come for my Quran, they're going to have to pry it out of my cold, dead hand.
That's right. That's absolutely right. There's no way. And this is the reason why. You know, I find myself a libertarian, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years, simply because of what the party stands for. And a lot of people question me, particularly Muslims, because they seem, I know some Republican Muslims, and I know a lot more Democratic Muslims. But they question, why are you backing a party that can't win? Because it's the only party that's not trying to label us, you know, stick a number on us, you know, lock us up in concentration camps, you know, prohibit us from coming in and out of the country. You know, it's the only party that does that. And on top of that, it's the only party that is getting ready to have their major convention come this Memorial Day weekend for their presidential and vice presidential candidate. And they've asked a Muslim by the name of Will Coley, who is the founder of Muslims for Liberty. But on top of that, he has been a huge proponent in Porkfest. I believe you know Will Coley yourself.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, I got to get Will back on the show. He sent me a Facebook message, which I barely noticed because I have like 5,000 Facebook friends on one account and 4,000 on the other. So I never see these things. I happen to catch that. So I'm going to have Will on the show soon. So what's he doing precisely?
Well, he's actually the first Muslim to be invited to speak at a major party's convention.
Now, who's got him speaking there?
The Libertarian Party.
That's fantastic. Yeah, Will.
But they went a step further. One of the presidential hopefuls, Daryl Perry, posed a question to him 3 weeks ago of if he would like to run as vice president. After they spoke with some Libertarian delegates as to the possibility of a Muslim vice president running for Libertarian Party, basically the it was a resounding yes. And in the last 3 weeks, he started his vice presidency candidacy for the Libertarian Party and is gaining over the other two vice president hopefuls with a vast number of delegates already pledging to vote for him as the vice president. So here we have an opportunity to make history as Muslims in politics again, which is vastly larger than we could have ever hoped for, is that we could, even if there's no real possibility of the Libertarian Party ever getting into the White House, we at the very least get a Muslim on the same table with people like Gary Johnson and Hillary and Donald Trump and Frank Gaffney, who is the head advisor for the Ted Cruz campaign, somebody who is classically trained in fiqh and sunnah, who can actually be on the national stage and to debate this. And so this is huge.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to get Will on the show. Yeah, he's a friend. I've spent a fair amount of time with him at Porkfest. Mm-hmm. I missed it last year. But Porkfest, by the way, for all you listeners who didn't know that, it's not about pig meat. We don't eat that. it's a libertarian event, and it stands for the Porcupine Freedom Festival. It's
Porcupine up in New Hampshire. Freedom Festival, yep.
Yeah. I had a great time. Last time I was there was, I think, 2 years ago, and Ramadan came in right at the end of Porkfest. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we were fasting for the last day or two of Porkfest. And it was really amazing. And Will was giving away vast amounts of free food as a kind of a Ramadan thing. Mm-hmm. And everybody there loves him. I mean, I wouldn't be at all surprised if he got this nomination. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if he got the Libertarian presidential nomination someday, because he's the most popular guy at Porkfest. He and Davi Barker, the two well-known Muslim libertarians, were just the two most totally unanimously loved people at Porkfest. Mm-hmm. So I think there's obviously a future for Muslims in the Libertarian Party. The only question is there a future for libertarianism in America right now? Because, number one, freedom has been totally squashed under 9/11, the phony war on terror. And number two, the economics of libertarianism, however wonderful it may be at the smaller scale, the lower level, I don't think is adequate to deal with the larger organizations.
Well, I tend to tend to differ with you on this, simply because I think we're at the precipice of change. If we look at the latest Pew Research poll of American citizens, 67% of the country is done with the two-party paradigm that they have force-fed us, over the last several decades. So you've got 67% of the population that is fed up with the two-party paradigm. Now, on top of that, this is actually going to be the first year that every state will have the Libertarian ticket on the presidential ballot. This is the first time in history that all 50 states will have that. The third thing is that this is the first time in history that the Libertarian Party actually got a national televised debate on Fox News, of all places. But they got an actual, not just one, but they've got three national televised debates, on TV, so therefore making Libertarian Party more mainstream. If we go back to 2012 and 2008, the Libertarian Party was around then, so was the Green Party and some of these other ones. But even left-leaning news agencies like CNN were basically just bypassing anything that Ron Paul had to say when he was running for the Libertarian presidency.
Well, they actually stole the Republican nomination from Ron Paul, in my opinion.
Right. So, I have to disagree with you simply on the fact that, there are things that are happening this year that might not very well get the Libertarian in the presidency for this 2016. But I think that because they're beginning to open the doors to the third parties, and because the vast majority, 67% of the people, are either not going to vote at all, or they're going to vote third party, whether it's Green Party or Libertarian Party or whatever. And also, I think with Will Coley running for the vice presidency nomination for the Libertarian Party, I think that will help disenfranchised Muslims who either A, don't vote because they don't understand the process, or B, don't vote because the parties don't represent our values or what we think our representatives should be doing. But at the same time, then you also have that 1.3 million they said that did vote, that vastly 99% of them all went with the Democratic Party, which still boggles my mind why they would, but I think with a vice president that is Muslim, I think that that would bring that 1.3 or a good portion of that 1.3. But a lot of these disenfranchised Muslims, if not for any other reason other than to just vote for a Muslim, you know, I think we could bring out closer to that 3 million that they say are in America right now.
Well, I don't know if you caught my radio show with Samuel Arian, but he essentially got Bush elected in 2000 because he did an incredible job of organizing the Muslim vote. And it was thanks to him that virtually every Muslim in Florida voted for Bush Cheney. And that was because in the past, of course, most Muslims had tended to vote Democrat. But that time they didn't, because he went around canvassing both parties and talking about the disappearances without trial, secret evidence disappearances of Muslims, which was a huge issue then. And the Bush-Cheney camp promised to stop it, and the Democrats wouldn't. So he flipped the vote, and that was the difference. Without the Muslim vote, Bush-Cheney could not have pretended that they won Florida, which actually they didn't anyway, but they wouldn't have been close enough to pretend that they won it and steal it if it hadn't been for Samuel Arian. So he put Bush in the White House, and the way he was repaid was that he was scheduled, he and other American Muslim leaders were scheduled to meet with Bush and celebrate the end of the secret evidence disappearances of Muslims. And the date that he was supposed to meet Bush in the White House to have that huge Muslim-American celebration in the White House was September 11th, 2001. So something happened that morning that kind of messed with their schedule. They never were able to have that meeting. And, of course, all of the nightmares of disappearing Muslims on secret evidence went even further out of control after that. But the point being that Muslims are in a position to deliver votes in a group and actually have a big impact on elections. Bernie Sanders took Michigan largely thanks to the Muslim vote. And of course, all the mainstream types are saying, wait a minute, why are Muslims voting for a Jew? I thought all Muslims were anti-Semitic. No, we're not. We're just not stupid. But anyway, yeah, it's really interesting. And I'm very pleased to hear this about Will Coley and in the Libertarian Party. That's really exciting.
Well, real quick, I want to say this before we continue on. I want to give to your listeners Will Coley's website and his dates that he'll be going to conventions or delegate conventions and speaking. Is that okay real quick?
Yeah. Please go ahead.
Okay. His website is Coley, which is spelled C-O-L-E-Y, for L-P-V-P. So that would be Coley for Libertarian Vice President. So Coley, the number 4, L-P-V-P.com. That's his website. And you can actually, he will be in New York at the New York convention this weekend. He'll be in West Virginia on May 7th, and then he'll be in Lansing, Michigan on the 14th. And then I will actually be this weekend in Saline, Kansas, helping to promote him at the Libertarian Delegate Convention in Kansas this weekend.
Very cool. You know, I have to talk to some of my friends in Michigan, see if I can find a way to do a book talk or something in Michigan and get over there and see Will, because I'd like to shake his hand and congratulate him for this. It sounds really great.
Well, you know, we have a funny joke saying that, you know, best case scenario is libertarians get the White House. And in that best case scenario, that president's pretty much going to be able to do whatever he wants without fear of assassination or impeachment, simply because the vast majority of Americans don't want a Muslim as president. So
there you go. Right. Yeah. That's it's always good to pick a vice president who's sort of like life insurance.
Yeah.
I always figured that was why H.W. Bush picked Dan Quayle. I mean, just the thought of Quayle in the White House was so awful that nobody could even consider doing anything to Bush. Otherwise, they would have wanted to. But Muslims traditionally have voted Democrat, despite the fact that they share certain kinds of values, perspectives with Republicans more than Democrats. Muslims, by and large, are not big fans of the sexual revolution, gay marriage, all that sort of stuff. And they tend to support the traditional values perspective. And the libertarians, of course, are very much on the opposite wing. There are people in the Libertarian Party who are pretty extreme in terms of supporting like an anything goes approach to morality. Like, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else, it's cool. Just go out and do it in public. And most Muslims are not really on that wavelength. So how do libertarian Muslims like you and Will Coley and Dobby Barker deal with that?
Well, I mean, I think you'll find that, you know, regardless of which party you go on, you have these extremes that you know, that anything goes, and even if it's contrary to the, you know, to the platform of the party. But for the most part, as far as Libertarian Party is concerned, it's not so much that you can do whatever you want to do in public, because you have to always be conscientious of your freedoms infringing upon somebody else's freedoms. And this is paramount within the Libertarian Party. So, you know, take us as Muslims, we don't agree with homosexuality. But at the same time, we also know that it happens. And God tells us in the Quran, that not specifically about homosexuality, but about sin, period, that it should be kept in the dark. That if you're going to violate the things that I tell you not to do, then don't do them in public. So when you look at what you're talking about, the homosexuality issue, since that's the hot topic right now, you know, the word homosexual or gay or anything like that does not exist in the Quran. It's the act that we as Muslims oppose. It is not the person that we oppose. It's just the act that is committed. And even in Islam, if that act is committed within Hannah? The darkest, within the shadows, where it is not public and mainstream, then we don't know about it, so it's not an issue for us. That's between those people and God.
And of course, that's how a lot of Westerners used to criticize Islam in the Victorian era. They said that Islam was way too promiscuous and anything goes, because the Muslims don't run around persecuting homosexuals, right, and et cetera, et cetera. Right. So people like André Gide, the great French writer, would go to Islamic lands in order to indulge in their homosexuality, because it was much, much easier there, because Muslims didn't actively run around seeking out and persecuting homosexuals.
And so Wahhabism.
Yeah. And Wahhabis probably do. But yeah. There's a good philosophical argument for this approach, which you can start with René Girard's observation that humans are mimetic creatures. That is, we just sort of instinctively imitate the people around us without even stopping to think about it. And therefore, what people do in public in full view of everybody is going to create mimetic contagions as other people see it and start doing it. Mm-hmm. And so there are certain kinds of activities that, as seemingly harmless as they might be, if they're done, you know, here, there, and so on, if they set off a mimetic contagion in public, you can have all kinds of disaster, because for sexual issues, for example, of all kinds, not just homosexual, just sexual issues in general, when, you know, people see sexuality, they get sexually aroused. Mm-hmm. And then as they get jealous and, you know, have these rivalries, what Girard calls mimetic rivalries with other people, then violence and aggression can break out. And mm-hmm. so in order to prevent this sort of thing, which is called fitna in Islam, we say, don't do these certain kinds of things in public. Right. And, you know, you should, maybe as many of them you shouldn't be doing at all. But the real issue is just do not do them in public, and we will prevent people from doing them in public. But what's done outside of the public eye, we're not going to actively go out and worry about it.
Well, because, I mean, you're not going to know about it. And you're actually right. There's a sense of desensitizing everybody from from these immoral acts. If we go back to the 1950s, we can see, started before then, but, 1950s was kind of the beginning of the sexual revolution within America, if you would. And it was a gradual progression of permissibility, of what could be seen and viewed in public through media or, whatever. And, and it was a progression that brought us to the point that we're at right now. And that's not libertarianism. You know, being a libertarian means that, if my neighbor wants to smoke marijuana or drink alcohol, as long as I'm not being forced to partake in it, as long as I'm not being forced to observe it, as long as it's not causing any damage or harm to my person, property, or family, then it is not a violation of freedom. It's when they cram it down your throat, which is where true libertarians who understand what libertarianism is, that is the problem. So if we look at the sexual revolution that we're having now in this country, you know, the next wave, you know, making homosexuality not just permissible in a sense, but celebrated. Well, that's a violation. You know, I'm a Muslim, but I like football. I'm a New York Giants fan. Always have been, probably always will be. Now, I'm not a diehard one that sits and watches every single game, and I don't know every single player of the Giants, but I catch a lot of the games. I watch the NFL. And when I'm watching the NFL draft to see who the New York Giants are going to pick a couple of Aprils ago, and the first openly gay guy gets drafted, and then we're forced to have to watch him kiss his boyfriend, that's a violation of my freedoms. That therein lies that, yes, you have a right to be whatever you want to be. That's fine. But don't make me have to watch it. I don't want to have to watch it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's... I think the way a lot of people feel, and you might find a lot of ordinary Americans discovering that the Muslims are making more sense than a lot of non-Muslims yeah. on these issues. And of course, that kind of attitude normally isn't associated with the Libertarian Party, though. The Libertarian Party would normally, a lot of libertarians anyway, are pretty much in favor of having no coercion whatsoever in the public sphere. I think most libertarians haven't really thought through this issue of mimetic contagions and mm-hmm. so on and so forth. But anyway, it's a fascinating topic, and we'll have to take it up again in the future as we're getting towards the end of the half hour. And I know you have to get back to work.
Yes, I do.
But I'm glad you reminded me about Will Coley's vice presidential bid. I definitely bring him on. Maybe I can get him for the other half of this hour when we put this out. The show's being pre-recorded by a couple of days because Alan Rees of No Lies Radio is having a little medical issue, but it's going well. He'll be back in a couple of days, and we'll be... I guess if you're listening to the show, everything's good. Alan is back. So anyway, thank you so much, Issa Hajj. I appreciate your great work. And give us the website where people can listen to A Muslim and a Catholic Wake Up in America.
Yeah, just go to www.wakeupinamerica, M-E-R-I-C-A. So drop the A in front of America.com, and you'll be right there. We're live every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And just click the Listen Live tab, and you'll be able to chat with us live while we're on the show. There's also a call-in number there for you to call in. That's one of the things we pride ourselves on, is that even in the middle of a conversation with the guests, we'll take a caller in just because we like interaction with our listeners. But then also you can chat with us and interact with us that way as well. And then you also, if you just take some time on the website, you can look at some lectures and speeches that I've given over the years, as well as articles that I've written and interviews that I've done. And Kevin, I just wanted to say real quick before we end this, I posted the unedited version of our interview that you and I did together with our friend and an Islamic Zionist nut job, or actually I should call him a Cryonist because he's a Christian Zionist, Tom Trento, because I wanted to let my listeners be able to see the lengths at which these idiots would go with their rhetoric.
Oh, yeah. So if people want to see me dropping some F-bombs, my thought at the time was this guy's mainstream radio, so I can screw up his show.
Well, you did, because he couldn't air any of that stuff. But
yeah, I think he had to, like, bleep out, the whole 2 minutes.
Yeah, I was recording it. So it's the unedited version that I put on there, because I knew that they would chop it up and, edit it to fit, their... listeners and their agenda. So,
Okay, well, that'll be a treat for all Truth Jihad Radio fans, I'm sure. So, thank you so much, Issa Hajj. Keep up great work.
Thank you for letting me come on here.
Okay, take care. Assalamu alaikum.
Waalaikumsalam.